Welcome to the Untold Stories of Central Minnesota. This is Arts and Cultural Heritage producer Jeff Carmack, and for today it's another installment featuring an organization which has been affected by the COVID-19 outbreak. This time it's a little different though, because it's the Stearns History Museum. While on one hand, numerous programs and the museum itself is closed down due to the community precautions, but the museum has also found itself in a unique position to be actually fulfilling their mission by identifying and preserving the history of this moment that we find ourselves living in. So that's what we're going to be talking about today with Executive Director of the Stearns History Museum, Carrie Essick. So, Carrie, welcome to the Untold Stories of Central Minnesota. And as you were saying, as we were getting ready to chat on air, you check in at the museum every once in a while, you know, just kind of see how things are going and kind of wondering if you had one of those night at the museum kind of moments yet.
So I'm exaggerating a little bit when I say that I'm hanging out alone. So, you know, we are still, believe it or not, under a governor's order to not be open to the public as the museum. So we're still closed, but we did open up our offices to at least a couple of staff folks almost from the beginning, in part because when you have a building full of historic materials that are valuable, not just financially, but, you know, in terms of telling community stories, you want to make sure they're protected every day. And so one of us had to go in the museum every day just to make sure that the HVAC system was working. Believe it or not, there's all sorts of really fun, complicated stuff related to temperature and humidity that most people don't think about when they go into a museum, but we do every single day. So every day I go back to make sure the boiler's like working and doing what it needs to be doing and that the air circulation system's doing what it's doing. So there's been a couple of us that have come and gone since mid-March to make sure that the things are up and running. The other interesting thing is that, you know, the construction trades haven't stopped working completely, and now they've obviously started to ramp up again. You know, city government continues to work, the fire department continues to work, and people don't necessarily think about how is like the fire department or city government related to the museum. Well, the reality is that if somebody's doing a construction project and they need to know something about either the land underneath a building or they need to know something about maybe what historic value a building has, we're the first people they look to. And if we're closed, we can't provide that information. So we have been working remotely to provide, like I said, the fire department was in last week because they were looking to make sure that they knew exactly where the placement of some underground features were from a historic building and things like that. And we go into the museum, do the research we need to, and then provide that information to folks. The other thing is let's be honest, everybody's home, right? You and I were both saying at the beginning of this, we're both working from home. And the reality for that is that we get people who, we got a lot of requests right now for genealogy. I've told people, I said, if you're missing a branch or maybe even a leaf or maybe a whole tree, we might be able to help fill in some of those gaps right now for you. And we're doing that as a service at essentially no charge. For a certain amount of work, for anybody who's looking for information about their historic home or about their family, we're trying to at least give patrons a little bit of information to get them started, with the hope, of course, that once we're able to access a little bit more, that they'd come in and do a little bit more research. So we haven't stopped working. We've just had to shift how we're doing it. Yeah.
It's almost like as needed. Because there's all these different needs out there that the museum fulfills in normal times. Yeah. It's just part of your normal day.
Yeah.
But now, well,
we just have to do things a little differently. So, and yes, we are collecting stories. So that's the other big piece of everything that we're doing right now. We just launched, and probably what's prompted a lot of conversation, we put out a press release so people knew about it. You know, when the last pandemic hit the United States, the Stearns County Historical Society didn't exist. And so it wasn't until later, after we had opened and after we started collecting stories, that we started asking people about the pandemic and that we started to collect things. Well, this time it's a little different. We're all here and we're open, right? And so we're taking advantage of that in the sense that there's a lot of people out there that are looking for things to do. There's a lot of people that are looking to find ways that they can record information about what is happening in the world. There's a lot of teachers looking for projects for kids in history classrooms and things like that. And so this is an opportunity for folks to take some time to write down a story, to send us a photo, to send us a short video, to let us know kind of what they're doing and how they're coping. And the other neat thing is that not everybody does it the same. We've got a very diverse county with a lot of different opinions and a lot of different perspectives. And what's neat about putting something out online that says, hey, share your story with us, is that everybody has the chance to share their story. And everybody has a chance to be a part of the archives and to share how they're feeling about what's going on. So we're asking people, you know, if you're out in the backyard and you're taking, you're doing like I did. I doubled the size of my garden this year just because in the evenings I didn't want to watch reruns. And so, you know, or the same movie 22 times. And so, you know, take a picture of the vegetable garden you've doubled in size. Or maybe you decided that it was finally time to build onto the house and you guys are actually putting an addition on the house. Share us some pictures, you know, tell us your story. Why did you decide to do it now? You know, there's all sorts of different opportunities for that. And then of course you've got everything going on with schools and you've got everything going on with our kiddos this year and the kids that wanted to graduate and have big celebrations and, you know, do all the fun things for graduation. And instead we're doing drive-by graduations and signs in people's yards. And, you know, I saw a really funny cake from one of the grocery stores the other day. You know, people are just kind of trying to make the best of what's kind of a crummy situation. And all of those pieces together tell a story about who we are as humans in Stearns County. And really, we're collecting not just for us, but we're collecting for people in the future. And the reality is that if we only do everything digitally, 100 years from now, we don't even know if we'll be able to access everything digitally. So what the museum's doing is collecting it. We will certainly collect it digitally and eventually make it available to the public. But we're also going to figure out a way to, if whether it's just printing off everything on a piece of paper so that we've got a paper copy of it, or making sure that we're migrating data from system to system over the years so that 100 years from now, people will still be able to see who we are or who we were, as the case may be. So yeah, we're trying to give the folks of Stearns County really an opportunity to tell us what they want saved, instead of us trying to second guess it later.
Yeah. But yet still collecting just about as much as possible, I would imagine. Mm-hmm. Well, this has got to be kind of a really exciting time, simply because this is literally history happening. And I guess there's probably a shift in gears to determining what actually is historical. I mean, we're going through history, and it does sound like a silly question, but how do you know if something is historical? And, you know, like 100 years from now, how are people going to look at this and what are they going to get from this? What kind of questions can we answer for them about what took place during the pandemic? You know, like talking about like stuff like distance learning and whatnot.
Well, or maybe the question will be, wow, remember what happened before we started distance learning, and distance learning becomes part of a new norm. You know, and I mean, that's a prediction. I have no idea what's going to happen. But the when you have a major shift socially and economically like you're having right now, we don't know what it's going to turn out. And I'm not a predictor of the future, you know, and I'm not a politician who works on trying to fix things right this minute. I have the luxury of being able to look back at things. And so, you know, what'll be interesting for us as historians 10 years from now will be to say, what were those major things that changed after, you know, 2020?
Mm-hmm. Policies, behaviors, all those little things that make up our day. And yeah. You know, that is the weird thing about this virus, is because it's spreading through behavior. Simply because you don't know if you're sick. So everybody's got to behave in a certain way for it to not spread. And I guess that's really what's causing all the problems.
Well, but you'd have to remember, in 1918, they didn't know what was making them sick either. You know what I mean? So that puts it in perspective. Like the last time, we know that it was the flu because we can look back on it, and scientists figured out a whole lot of stuff and created vaccines and did all this other stuff. But in 1918, when people were getting sick, they had sort of identified the problem, but they didn't know how it spread completely in 1918. So you can learn a lot from history too if you take a look at it. If nothing else, for those of us that work in history, it puts the world and our life right now in perspective. And I think more than anything, just kind of makes us take a deep breath and go, huh, it'll be interesting to see how this all works out. But so we're collecting, yeah, and we're collecting stories. We're collecting, obviously, digital photographs. We're collecting little videos if people want to share them. But the other thing that I'm telling people to do or suggesting, I don't tell anybody what to do, but suggesting that people do, is that they save their materials. So like if they do have a high schooler graduating this year, you know, maybe save it for posterity, obviously. But if you weren't thinking about saving it, well, maybe think about saving it and then think about maybe donating it to the museum. Obviously, once the medical crisis of all of this is over, we will start to look at, can we get materials from the hospital that represent what was going on? So that would be scrubs, masks, you know, other pieces of equipment that obviously right now are one, being used, and two, there's not enough of necessarily to go around. So we're certainly not in a position where we're going to be at. And more importantly, the physicians are, you know, up to their eyeballs in sickness right now. So we are certainly not bugging them. We are certainly letting them do their job and letting them focus on what they do best. I've got a lot of really good friends in that profession, and they're all like, you know, we'll talk to you in a few years, Gary. But the reality is that we are thinking about those things, and we are starting to identify those things. And we've had a conversation actually with the CentraCare archivists about how can we make sure that as we go forward, we're capturing what we need to make sure that we represent this time in history. But you know, there's other like things that have, I don't know, that are just differences in the way that we see and do the world, right? And so things like, if you go into almost any store now and you walk up to the cashier's counter, you know, there's plexiglass around cashier's counters the way you've never seen it before. You know, when this whole thing started, you couldn't walk into a store and find toilet paper anywhere. We actually went out into the community during those times and started documenting that with photographs. So we would go through and we'd take photographs of all these sort of, you know, none of us would have thought 6 months ago that you'd have a piece of plexiglass between you and the cashier at any one of your favorite stores, right? And now that's there, and it may or may not become permanent. None of us know that yet. So I don't know that we'll actually collect the plexiglass because that's a little bit cumbersome, but we might. You know, if a store renovates and that plexiglass becomes a part of their cashier experience permanently, we might ask them to cut out the whole cashier experience and bring it to the museum, and it would become part of our historic collection. So we'll see.
Oh, absolutely. I could do an exhibit right there with the whole checkout lane.
Exactly.
With the plexiglass and the signs up and limit one per customer for a roll of toilet paper.
Exactly. So we will be talking, you know, years from now about what it was like to live through this particular experience. So
you're in tune to 88.1 FM KVSC and the Untold Stories of Central Minnesota. And today we've got Carrie Essick, Executive Director of the Stearns History Museum. We're talking about how the COVID virus is affecting their programming, both in the positive and negative, because we're living through history and they're collecting stories and photos and videos. Because if there's one thing that we've learned from history, is that history is made up of the smallest of details.
It would be really interesting, and I would encourage listeners to think about for a minute and think back 3 months from now and just do a list of things I thought I was going to do this year and things that I know that I'm going to do this year, and then at the end of the year, things I actually did. Because I think those three lists are going to be very different for different people, and I think that I think even a month ago, some of us, and to give a really good example of this, the museum, we missed our big event this year. We were supposed to have a big celebration at the end of April, and of course, there was no way we could host that. We've always had it in the past at the College of St. Benedict, and you know, of course, they were closed, so that, you know, there was a million reasons we couldn't do it. Not to mention the fact that everybody would get sick. But then on top of that, we had actually set a tentative date for halfway through the summer to say, well, we'll do it in the summer. Well, you know, 3 weeks later, 4 weeks later, look at that, you know, the summer is now off the table. I remember having a conversation with one of my board members on a Friday and saying, wow, I really think something bad is coming, and I really think we're going to have to take a look at how is this going to socially and economically impact the museum, you know? And we were talking about it, and it was like, well, you know, we're going to kind of hold steady. We're not going to panic yet kind of thing. We're not going to make any major decisions. Literally within 48 hours, the world changed, and it was, we need to shut down today. And in fact, the governor told us we had to. But you know, not only that, life as we knew it changed on a dime. And yeah, if somebody had told me that I'd have signs on the front of the museum that said, all contractors must wear masks to come in the building, and here's the hand sanitizer, and you must make an appointment, and the only people that are allowed in the building besides the staff are contractors right now, I wouldn't have believed it. It certainly wasn't what I expected.
It just sounds too extreme and too crazy. Yeah. Like, there's no way it could happen.
Exactly.
But now it's commonplace. Oh, yeah. But the shift in our world.
Yeah.
You know, and it's kind of tricky because, you know, I don't want to use the word exciting for historians, but it is literally happening right now. And this is the kind of stuff we only read about in books, and we're in the book. It's a
weird
feeling. Well,
and what's happened for us as a museum, and I know it's happened for a lot of other museums around the state, and what's been nice for us is because we do have a small staff and a very nimble staff. We don't have a lot of systems. We've got processes and systems in place, obviously, for everything, but it's at a very small scale. And so what's been nice for us is as soon as we realized that this was going to be longer than like a week, we were able to do a really major shift in terms of how we're delivering content and how we're serving our patrons. So like I said, you know, from a research perspective, it's email us, call us, check out our catalog, you know, start to do the research you can from home or from wherever you happen to be. And in the meantime, we'll do what we can on the back end to help you because we can social distance and take care of each other within the museum. The best part, though, has been within our education and our exhibition team where, you know, you can't be in the exhibits, you can't be in the building right now, and we can't do some of the programs that we like to do outdoors in the summertime. And so what do we do in its place? So we started a podcast, and there are all sorts of crazy, interesting, amazing stories out on our YouTube channel now, which is, there's a link right on our webpage to get there. And then we've got this great new thing going on called Stories of Our Stuff that started a couple weeks ago with a wedding cake from the 1930s. Who knew that a museum had a wedding cake from the 1930s, right? We do.
Wait. Wait, an actual wedding cake?
It is literally somebody's wedding cake. And it was like, there's this whole story, and I'm not going to share all the details because then you don't have a reason to go to Facebook. But
yeah, go to the podcast. Yeah.
Literally what happened was, is it was like, you know how there was that, there was a tradition for a long time, and I don't know if it's still a tradition or not, but you'd save like part of the wedding cake so that you could eat it in a year, right? And then something happened and they didn't eat it in a year, and then something happened and they saved it, and then suddenly like in the 1980s this piece of this wedding cake from the 1930s, and it's not the piece, it's like the whole top of the wedding cake, was saved for posterity, and then eventually turned over to the museum. So it's a really interesting story. And like I said, I'm not going to share the details with you. I did discover this morning, I was talking to a friend of mine, that there are other museums in the country that also have pieces of wedding cake in them. So it's not just us, but I would say ours is one of the most interesting. We did a story yesterday that went live yesterday about a buggy and one of the carriages that's in our collection. You know, we've got some amazing pieces, and Stearns County folks have been very generous, and Stearns County businesses have been very generous in sharing pieces of their history with us. So we've got some cool things that you can't necessarily have on display all the time, because if you do that, then the light and the people touching it and all that kind of stuff starts to impact the shape of the piece. So, you know, we rotate things out so you don't get to see everything every day. So this is a chance to get a sneak peek at some things that you don't get to see every day, but have a lot of unique history with Stearns County. So we're doing that. We had a couple of programs that we haven't been able to quite transition yet, but we're still working, but we're working towards it with our breakfast club. You know, that's a program where 80 people, 90 people come once a month to hear a program. Well, we had a couple of programs that we just couldn't make it work. We're starting to do some interviews and retool that program so that people will be able to see those presentations online until we're able to gather again. And then we've got all of our youth programs. We have started to make some adjustments so that those could also be online. So we did this. We do this program called Little History for like preschoolers. So now our curator is actually, our program curator is actually reading the stories and then teaching you how to do the crafts using things that you might have in your home. So you don't even have to go to the store half the time if you don't want to participate in this history program. So lots of stuff going on. We just made a big shift to go from, okay, we used to do this right in the museum. Now we're going to do them online. And to be perfectly honest with you, it's really pushed us to think about how we can offer more to a broader audience by continuing to do some of this online, no matter how we get to open eventually. So some of these programs, I think, will become a feature that will be available to the public for much longer than just whatever this COVID-19 experience is.
I think so. There's that shift. There's a paradigm shift.
Yeah.
Things are changing.
Yeah.
And but
exactly.
To go back to the wedding cake for a second.
Yeah.
Not really a tangent, but...
Okay.
So think about this. A long time ago, somebody got married.
Yep.
And some cake just kind of sat around. Now, eventually, there comes a point, a family discussion. You know, grandma and grandpa have passed away, and the kids are trying to figure out what to do with all this stuff. And all of a sudden, they notice that there's this wedding cake from 1930.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a family discussion. What do we do with this? So someone's like, hey, mm-hmm. let's take it to the museum, see if somebody wants it. And, of course, the museum says yes. Now... other museums have had the same experience. So there's kind of this behavior, this sociological behavior in place.
Yes.
It doesn't happen for everybody, but it happens for enough people that it does happen. So the museums are getting that material from the families. Now, I bet there's stuff going on right now, which is just like that. It's like the new wedding cake.
Oh, yeah.
Is this new thing. We don't even know what it is yet. But they're happening. They're happening right now.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. Think about the thing in your life right now that could end up history. And literally, it's everything. But think about that one thing that, like, a family reunion or a family celebration or a business opportunity. Maybe there's a business out there in Stearns County that has created some new... widget,
yeah,
you know, that fixes something that none of us have ever had to think about fixing before. You know, those types of things are going to be the things that we want to collect. And so I'm shouting out now and saying, hey, if you think you've got something historic, even if it's not history yet, eventually it will be, let's talk. Because I want people to be thinking about it before we're, you know, asking for it later.
Hunting for it. Yeah. Yeah.
And sometimes it's common stuff, you know, sometimes it's, and the best example I can give of that, you know, we do have a lot of farming equipment in our collection,
mm-hmm.
and that's great. But you know what? There's also every once in a while a piece we don't get because it gets well used and it gets so used on the farm that it falls apart. So, you know, there's always those weird little things too that you don't think about because you use them every single day. That a museum would just be thrilled to have because it represents daily life.
Yeah, absolutely. So if people are wanting to contact you and see if they can donate or share,
sure.
how would they go about getting a hold of you?
So digitally, the good news is right on our homepage right now, it says share your story now, and there's a click button, and you can click on it, and you can actually just type in your story, your information, and there's a link so that you can upload something right away. If it's a little bit more complicated or it's a whole photo album or something like that, what we're telling people with three-dimensional objects is until we get some better protocols in place to be able to know a little bit more about our virus, we're asking people to just set those things aside gently in some corner of their home. And when we are ready to open to the public again, then we will make appointments for people to bring stuff in. But if they want to share stuff digitally, they can do it, like I said, right now, right on our homepage, which is Stearns HistoryMuseum.org. And there's a link right there that says share your story or share now. And you can click on that button and there's a page that pops up with all the information and all the instructions on how to do that. And if you've got something you think is unique, you could certainly send an email to info@stearns-museum.org. And we can tell you right away whether it's something we think we might want to take. But like I said, we are not bringing people into the museum yet.
Yeah, understandable for sure.
Yeah.
Well, Carrie, thanks for chatting with me today.
Yeah, it was fun. Thank you for having me.
We've been talking with Carrie Essig, Executive Director of the Stearns History Museum, here today on the Untold Stories of Central Minnesota. For more information on how to get your history recorded by the Stearns History Museum during the time of the COVID-19 pandemic, and to check out a variety of programs at the Stearns History Museum online, you can find them online at stearnshistorymuseum.org. And you too could be part of the local story as history goes on. This has been Arts and Cultural Heritage producer Jeff Carmack, reminding you that you make history every single day. The Untold Stories of Central Minnesota is made possible through support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. It has been produced at KVSC, a proud member of AMPRS, Diverse Radio for Minnesota's communities.